Okay, this is Jim Whalen. I'm along with my longtime friend Jerry Calla.
Good afternoon. Excuse me.
Good afternoon. All right. Good afternoon, you sir. This will be our first guest. I started this podcast back in November. I started off with Bob Hurley, somebody that Jerry knows very well. From that, I needed help. I put an ad out in Craigslist. Jerry was applied for it, interviewed. He got the job. So we started this new venture. It's called Sports Consiglieres. So it's going to be with Jim Whalen and Jerry Calla. I checked my ancestry. I'm not Italian, so Jerry, I don't know if you could talk about what is a consigliere for people who don't know.
Well, I just want to say I think most Irish people that I've encountered really, really, really want to be Italian. So I think, you know, we have to get that out of the way. So and let's also, you know, tell everybody who chose this name. So I believe we have to give credit to the missus. Can we confirm that or no?
I don't know. She didn't like the old name, so definitely
she didn't like the old name, but she did contribute to the new name.
Yeah, so that's true. But with that being said, our first guest would play in the Big East in the 80s. He was one of Coach Cal's he was an assistant at Pitt, had one of five players that went to Pitt University during the heyday of the Big East from 87 to 91. Right now, he's up in Boston running a BRB. He's looking for a holistic approach to basketball. He's from Atlantic City, New Jersey. We know him well from New Jersey. Jerry and I both being from Jersey. Jerry being JC from Jersey City. So proud to introduce our first guest, Bobby Martin from Pitt Panthers. Thanks for coming on, Bobby. You know, it'll be the first McDonald's All-American on, so I know Atlantic City was at the time was a basketball mecca. We all know about Willie Glass. You went out to Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh, and that recruiting class that you're in is considered probably one of the top 25 recruit class of all time. So, and that also obviously Coach Cal was behind that. So just talk a little bit about your time in Atlantic City High School and how did Cal find you?
Got you. Well, I would say that my time in Atlantic City High School was the most important period of my young life. You know, our coach was Bill DeVinny. Our assistant coach was Lloyd Barksdale, who introduced me to basketball. And, you know, growing up in South Jersey, we were, you know, always traveling up to Philadelphia to play in the Sunny Hill League.
Okay.
And, you know, those things were, you know, absolutely instrumental to me being able to develop and get a scholarship to go to college. Because at that time, it was probably the only way I was going to get out of Atlantic City. Cal still has the ability, I like to say, to talk a starving dog off the back of a meat truck. I mean, this guy, he is... He continues to be a dear friend, and you know, I'm glad to see him, you know, make his changes and continue to evolve. You know, Cal was the catalyst for me for, you know, decommitting from Nova and attending Pitt. And, you know, besides that, the teammates that I had, you know, like Jason Matthews, who is still a dear friend of mine, Sean Miller. I mean, all of us who came in together, we still keep in touch. And I think that's what college is all about.
Yeah. And I heard Jason talk at another podcast. He said, I guess for you guys, the five of you came in, you're all 1,000-point scorers, and also you all got your degree. And I don't think that's ever been duplicated since. So.
Well, look, I mean, I think we all had adults in our lives who wouldn't have had it any other way. We had people to answer to. You know, you weren't going to college to play basketball. That's for sure. You were going to graduate.
Jerry, you want to chime in here? You got any questions for Bobby? I know you got to let him in easy. I don't want to give too many Georgetown questions right away. So
I'm not going to bring any Georgetown stories up. I was actually going to, Coach, I was going to ask you who was the first loss to your freshman year after running off 9-0? I think that was in the place called the Capitol Center.
You know, I can't even remember. That was so long ago.
Wow. Good answer. Yeah. Actually, Coach, to fast forward a little, I was looking at your website, which was, you know, very impressive. Obviously, a lot of the stuff that you're doing today. And the one thing that caught my eye was how you say you take a holistic approach to dealing with players, you know, in today's game and, you know, what you do as far as their overall development. And I was just curious if you could just elaborate, you know, what that holistic approach is.
So, you know, I think basketball has given us one look at, you know, how can I explain this? Yeah, it's given us one look at life. You know, everybody likes to say that basketball, you know, ball is life. I disagree. I think life is life. Basketball gives you a nice rosy bed to land in time and time again. And in college, you get to do it for 4 years. As a professional, not so much. But, you know, what it doesn't do is give you a great perspective on yourself. You know, you're always told you're the best, or, you know, you've got another chance. And in the real world, you don't. So, you know, with time and perspective, I learned that, again, life is life. And if you're not willing to challenge yourself, if you don't have people in your lives that are willing to tell you the truth, to challenge you, to make you earn, you know, to make you earn a right to have an opinion, then you're probably going to be in a lot of trouble. And I've seen that through the recent changes in basketball, you know, in the culture. You know, you've got your NIL deals, and not that the NIL deals are poor. Or it's a bad thing for basketball. But one thing, a negative point that I think it does is it makes the kids mercenaries. And if you're looking for the bag, then you're really not you're not addressing. I don't believe. Well, maybe you are. Maybe you're addressing what's important to you. But, you know, for me, it was the ball. Ball was important. You know, and why? Because it gave me a chance to express myself. So with the kids, what I do is we have real talk. You know, it's not about the bag. You can have goals, but what I try to stress are growth goals.
No, that's very, you know, very interesting, very fascinating take on that, obviously, because, again, I think the NIL, like you said, there's a lot of positives, there's a lot of negatives, and I think, you know, sometimes in certain situations, that's trumping, you know, the student-athlete part of it, and it's taking away, you know, from the education, because the education is not becoming, you know, the priority, you know, which is sad. I mean, it's becoming, you know, a business in certain, you know, in certain aspects.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird because, you know, I loved my time at Pitt. I had some great teachers. I had some great mentors, but it was life that taught me about life. You know, with Cal and Coach Evans and, you know, everybody there to pat me on the back and say it was going to be okay. It was a big change from, you know, when I went undrafted, and now I'm really trying to make it. And I've got to fight with, you know, veterans who are feeding families. So, you know, this was really taking a deep look and trying to figure out who I was. And even then, you know, it wasn't an easy process. It still isn't an easy process, you know, because you come up, you know, different things come up every day and you learn how to deal with them. You know, most people say, you know, I would never. And I just like to say, don't ever say never, because you don't know your triggers. So, you know, each day is a challenge. Many days are easier than others. But, you know, life is to be lived.
That's very well said. But get back to your Atlantic City days. You know, recently Atlantic City, up and down. But you know, you had Willie Glass. I think you went to St. John's. You went to Pitt. Yep. Like, where did you guys kind of cultivate your game? I know back then it was more of a playground sport. Where did you guys kind of cultivate your game? And did you cross? Did you and Willie Glass, were you on the same team at Atlantic City? Or
no. No, Willie was 4 or 5 years ahead of me. I grew up idolizing Willie Glass. I mean, you know, he was one of the high flyers. And we had a lot of guys from Atlantic City who were really good players. I mean, we had Leonard Hayes, who went to St. Peter's. We had Butch Warner that went to Gannon, you know, and many other guys who, you know, we just got a chance to watch as kids. So Willie's era was a little bit before mine. You know, we had Ralph Talley, who went to Norfolk State. Okay. You know, CIAA player of the year, Division II player of the year. So, you know, it was the West Side Complex, which was 2 minutes away from my house, or it was the Uptown Complex, or it was, you know, in between outdoors. That was it. There was nothing planned. You just go play.
Yeah. And that, getting back to Cal, I think you were like the first really big recruit out of New Jersey that he got. Since then, I mean, he's been at a slew of players come from Jersey. Carl Anthony Towns, Michael K. Gilchrist, you know, you go down the list, but you were like kind of the first get. Even your nephew, I think Lou Rowe was up in UMass. Is it your nephew, Lou Rowe?
Cousin.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
And they have a, you know, my son goes there now, and they got your cousin. He got his jersey hanging up in the rafters, and actually they have
he tells me that all the time.
Yeah. And they have a statue of Cal outside. But do you still keep in contact with them as far as
I do
since the changeover? Or?
Absolutely. I just went to see Cal. I was down at the Palestra. I took the train down from Boston to see Cal, to see Kentucky play Penn. I'm planning on going, is it south? I'm guessing southwest or whatever it is, or Arkansas. I have no idea where it is. Yeah. Yeah, we still keep in touch. I mean, you know, the good thing with Cal is I can call him and he'll call me right back.
Okay.
And that, to me, that says everything about, you know, who he is. You know, I still keep in touch with Lou. I see him all the time on the AAU circuit. He's also up here in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a family. It really is.
Jerry, you want to go?
Yeah, you know, Coach, another thing, too, that, you know, I was wondering if you could shed some light on, you know, you talk about how the game is, you know, evolved, the game has changed over the years, and you being such a dominant shot blocker. Now you want to use the term, it's a rarity that somebody is considered, you know, college basketball, you know, pro basketball, a dominant shot blocker. I mean, what do you attribute that to? Just the game evolving? Or is that a lost art, so to speak?
You know, I don't see any coach out there who doesn't want a shot blocker. You know, I'll put a caveat on the game has changed. The game may have changed, but the responsibilities have not. You still have to rebound. You still have to set good screens. You got to catch the ball. I mean, yeah, you can shoot from deeper now. But, you know, I love the dirty work, and I think you have to find guys who like that type of role on a team. It was never that, you know, we didn't worry about who was going to score or who was going to be a star. We worried about winning the game. And in that, you found yourself. Now, I like to tell the kids now that basketball, it's not a team sport. It's an individual sport where you give yourself to a team dynamic. And once you say you do, you're responsible for holding up your end of the bargain. You know, I'm still a Jersey kid at heart, but I love one thing that Belichick said up here. He said, do your job. Now, and you got to go out there and do your job.
Right.
Yeah. Did you get back on Pitt campus at all? I know since they, you know, listen, for me, like growing up in the Big East, you know, watching the 80s, 90s, I mean, both Jerry and I are like 80s, 90s kids watching that era. That was really, really good basketball. It was a lot of local talent we saw, were able to see in high school and then go on to college. And then yeah. Pitt and moves to the ACC. Have you been back there? And, you know, I know financially I think the school's doing better, but do you think it was the best fit for the program?
So the last time I was back there, well, actually, you know, I get back once a summer for AAU. You know, I've got an AAU team, so, you know, we go back, we play in the Pitt Jam Fest. The last time I was on campus was when they inducted Jerome into the Hall of Fame. You know, all the guys came back, yeah. And, you know, we had a great time, you know, just seeing each other and hanging out with Rome a little bit. I mean, Pittsburgh's changed. It's not the Pittsburgh that, you know, I'd like to say that I grew up in, but the people are still wonderful. The one thing that disappointed me the most was there's no O. Now, the O was where you went to get your subs, and it's not there anymore. So, yeah, the people there continue to be gracious. They continue to be loyal. They continue to be just awesome representatives of what a great city that it is.
And then I'll talk a little bit about the Jerome Lane. I mean, that goes down as one of the best dunks probably all time, and especially with Bill Rafferty. I mean, were you on the court for that? I think you guys were playing Providence, but you know, that game, and like what happened after? Like, it almost like it was like, you know, that's still one of the best, your best calls, I think, of all time. So
you know what? I'm going to let the other guys answer this because I am probably the only guy in the gym that missed the play.
Oh,
so I get pulled out of the game because I'm screwing up and Evans just finished chewing me out. So I've got my head in the towel, you know, thinking, trying to get myself together. And all of a sudden I hear the crowd just go crazy. I mean, you know, the field house went nuts. And I look up and they're picking glass out of Paco Screen's head, right? Because he had a little box haircut and they're picking glass out of it. And Rome is standing there. And I mean, he is hyped. Yeah. They give Demetrius and Charlie are giving him high fives. And I didn't see the play, nor did I get a piece of glass. So, okay. Yeah, I'm going to let the other guys answer that.
Jerry, what?
Now, Coach, switching gears a little, I was wondering if you could reflect on your time in the old, you know, Continental Basketball Association. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, being a North Jersey guy, I actually remember the Daily News every morning would have a very small article about the Albany Patroons. I mean, you had, you know, Phil Jackson, you had George Karl there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and again, that was a very interesting league. Very interesting.
It was. Unfortunately, I think Jackson had left the year before I got there, a year or two before I got there. But the league itself was a revolving door of who's who. I mean, you know, I'm seeing guys like Roy Marble, you know, Steve Scheffler, Jarvis Bassknight, who just passed away. You know, D2 players who were, you know, who I'd watched playing against Ralph Talley at one point or another. And they were all NBA veterans. So those were the guys getting called up. I had one guy from Norfolk State, Barry Mitchell. You know, I was his rookie. You know, he took me in. He showed me the ropes. He made sure that I was okay. You know, I played with Chris Childs, who everybody remembers giving Kobe a two-piece on national television. You know, these are the guys I played with, and it wasn't, you know, we were there to try to move up. So, you know, into the NBA. So you didn't have a lot of friendships. You had a lot of serious competitors. I mean, I remember, you know, watching Michael Graham, and now all of a sudden I'm playing against him. You know, speaking of Georgetown guys, and he was still one of the fiercest individuals that I've ever met in my life. I mean, just, and he was a horse, you know, and mean. So yeah, the CBA was rough, man. It was, you know, guys would get traded at halftime. You know, now all of a sudden on your team, it was nuts. It was nuts. I think Isaiah Thomas ended up taking over. The real Isaiah Thomas, Detroit Piston Isaiah Thomas took over. And, you know, he bought some, I don't want to say stability, but, you know, he was able to calm the guys down a little bit. And I thought it was a good league. My coach was Dan Panaggio and his dad, Mauro, who's a New York guy. They're both New York guys, upstate New York. You know, Dan was incredible. Maurice Cheeks was our assistant coach. Paul Mulkeski was an assistant coach. So
Milwaukee Buck,
Yes, Milwaukee Buck. So those are the guys that I got a chance to learn from. I value my time in the CBA.
Well, I'm sure because obviously, you know, G League, that was your way back into, you know, into the NBA. I mean, you look at, like you said, a lot of guys. I mean, Anthony Mason, that's where he was found. I mean, there's a lot of guys, you know, talking about, you know, New York, New Jersey guys. But, you know, it's pretty funny because I remember, you know, years later, Michael Ray Richardson actually became the coach of Albany. He did a, you know, wonderful job. I mean, that was kind of the last leg, if you will, you know, of that league. But
yeah, I think they played up in the old armory. There was an armory up there. Those guys, but it was cold in that gym. God, no.
But just what are you doing? And also, you 16 years you played professionally. Where else did you play besides the CBA? Because, you know, it's like you're trying to find after college, you're trying to find your kind of basketball career. I think that, you know,
right.
Where else did you go besides the CBA?
So after I left the CBA, most of my career was in Spain. I spent 13 years, almost 14 years in Spain. I've been fortunate enough to play on the best teams in the world outside of the U.S. You know, this is Real Madrid, where Luka Doncic came from. This is Sabonis, Arvidas Sabonis.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I've played with, at one point I'd played with every member of Spain's national team. So, you know, with or against, you know, this is Pau Gasol, Rudy Fernandez, Jorge Garbajosa, Calderon. I mean, all these guys. I think my career was so long in Spain because I was one of the few that understood that my perceptions of the world I'll say it this way. I understood that in order to get, I had to give. You know, in order to get, I had to give. I had to give of myself. And, you know, when you go over there, it's tough because you don't speak the language. So I immersed myself in the language. The culture of basketball was different, although the style of play is the style of play that we're using now. You know, and it's more of read and react. It wasn't as many set plays. You know, you had to understand reads. They were great. As soon as, you know, my teammates, I played with a guy from Philadelphia named Michael Anderson. He was a great guard at Drexel. And another guy named Johnny Rogers, who was a West Coast guy, one of the best shooters I've ever seen. And again, I was their rookie. You know, I'm over there at 23 years old and, they're showing me the ropes. You know, my Spanish teammates wouldn't speak to me in English for the first 3 months until they saw that I was actually going to try and you know, learn some Spanish and speak. Then I find out that they could speak English. So, but, you know, it's funny because when coaches would interview me, they all told me, they said, you know, as I moved up, they said, you know, the best thing about you, Bobby, is that, you know, you're consistent. And you don't think that, in their eyes, that America is everything, that you actually respect the country. You know, you respect our language, you respect our customs. And that kept me there for a long time. Now, I had responsibility, but, you know, they were always willing to listen first and, you know, and not cut me if I played poorly.
Did anybody shepherd you through the process, like saying, like, hey, it's not working here, maybe you should try Europe? Or, like, how did you kind of get the connection over to Spain?
So here's the thing about the CBA. If, you know, I think I was playing for, it was either $500 or $600 taxable a month. No, a week. It was a week. Yeah, $500 or $600 taxable a week. And you can't make a living in the minor leagues, not at that time. So everybody was trying to get out and get to Europe. The thing about Europe is that you can't make a good living unless you go to a good country. And Spain at that time was emerging as the best country because you were basically guaranteed your contract if you played well. You know, the contracts themselves weren't worth, you know, the paper they were printed on. But if you played well, you know, you'd be there. So this was, I mean, guys just wanted to get out. You know, because if you get over there, they're ready to send you back quickly if you're not producing. So, you know, again, there's nothing guaranteed. You have to produce. It makes you grow up quickly.
And Jerry, I had a colleague of ours that like played in NFL Europe. They set him up with housing. Mm-hmm. Does the clubs offer that over there? They sent you up with housing, and I guess if you had a family at the time, maybe assist your family. How is it different from playing in the NBA as far as like the, you know, the holistic approach of life? So,
well, I mean, I don't think you get a holistic approach at life in the NBA.
Okay, yeah. So I'm trying to steal Jerry's line. So,
Europe is, you know, one thing I found in Europe was that they had the same problems that we do here. They have families. They want to take care of their kids, and they just want to feel respected. So I think as Americans, what we tended to do was go over there and think because we were the best in the world at basketball that we could say what we want. But remember, though, the coaches had jobs that they wanted to keep. The players had jobs that they wanted to keep. And they were more concerned about the culture of their teams. So I think the coaches have much more influence on the style of play in Europe. Not so much in the NBA. I mean, you can see NBA coaches getting fired left and right because they don't get along with the players.
Sure.
American players in Europe have, like I said, they have no guaranteed contracts. So if you're not producing, you will be sent home. And I remember my first year in Europe, I got cut at Christmas and I was in France. And, And then my fiance at the time, I had asked her to come with me because it was really good money and I'm already counting it like the season was over.
Yeah.
And, I said, I'm standing there and I remember this like it was yesterday. We were in practice and Adrian Caldwell, who was a former NBA player, played with the Houston Rockets and a couple other teams, walks in the gym. And I'd seen Adrian in the different camps that I was playing in. I was in camp with Houston, actually. And he walks in and I said, man, what are you doing there? He said, I came to replace you. I said, what? So now, I'm on the next plane going home. And after that, I saw that this is real. This is real. So I did my best to make sure that never happened again.
Yeah. Trey, I don't want to hog up the interview, so I don't know if you got anything
else. You're doing a great job, Jim.
Okay, all right. He's here for moral support, so it's just...
Coach, he's worried I'm going to start throwing a lot of Hoyas stuff at him.
Hey, I've had a lot of Hoyas thrown at me, man. Not a problem.
Well, I was actually going to ask you, reflecting back on your Big East days, who was your toughest, somebody you had to guard, defend? Obviously the best thing about college basketball back then was for the most part, you played these guys for 4 years, especially the Big East. I mean, that's the thing I miss the most is those heated rivalries. I don't know if we'll ever have that again, in college basketball like it was back then. So who was the guys that, you look forward to competing against, but maybe you wish that, they had a stomach bug the night you were going to, be in their gym.
So the culture at Pitt, we were basically Steel City kids. And, there's a certain aura that comes with that. Every day, my freshman year, I'm playing against Charles Smith. I'm playing against Jerome Lane, Demetrius Gore, Rod Brookin. I came in with Brian Shorter, who was one of the best high school scorers in high school history. I mean, I think if he would have stayed at Simon Gratz, he would have probably broken Wilt Chamberlain's record. Brian was mean. He was tough. So our practices were hell. I mean, they were hell, man. I mean, this is Eric Mobley. But playing against guys, I don't know who to choose in the Big East because, Coach Evans was more concerned with Brian being able to get his 20-10. He was great at it. Mm-hmm. So I had to defend everybody. I mean, from Malik Sealy to, Seton Hall, I believe they had Mark Bryant, Ramon Ramos.
Yeah.
Syracuse was Derek Coleman, Ronnie Cicely, Howard Trish, Raphael Anderson, Jason Williams from St. John's. My God, every night was just tough, and even Georgetown. I mean, you got Alonzo and Dikembe standing there. You get past one and you see the other guy. Right. So it was tough, man. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I just know that I enjoyed the journey.
Right.
That's what you wanted. You wanted to play in the Big East. Yeah. This is, we considered ourselves the best conference in the country. Unfortunately, we had six fouls and – At the end of the season, you're worn down.
Yeah,
but it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
And I heard Jason Matthews on another podcast. He said that you guys kind of bonded together. I mean, you see, and you're still friends. Are you still friends with that group that came in? I think Sean Miller was the group that came. He was in your recruiting class too. I mean, you guys still like be in contact with each other and kind of. I know everybody kind of life happens. Everybody kind of goes about their ways, but you know that group that came in, you still keep in touch with each other.
We are in constant contact with one another. While Sean was at Xavier, I would get in there often. Well, he's back at Xavier now. Yeah. I'm talking about his first trip to Xavier.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance to get out there this year, but I'm planning on getting there. Jason and I see each other twice a year. Brian, I know he was in Kentucky with Cal. Let's see. Oh, Darrell Porter. I see him every time I go to Pittsburgh. We sit down, we eat. Sometimes I stay with him. And even the rest of our team, Pat Cavanaugh, you know, Scott Colombo, Steve Maslick, guys like that, we all stay in touch. I can't tell you how proud I am and how blessed I am to have met such great individuals, excellent people.
And then, obviously, if you look at, I'm looking at these old basketball cards of you, you're like a chiseled, you know, and now you're running BRB. Can you just talk a little bit about what you're doing now, and you're working with younger athletes, I guess, to kind of make them better. Just like one, how'd you end up in Massachusetts? And just talk a little bit about what you're doing now with your BRB company.
So I ended up in Massachusetts because speaking of the Big East again, I was in camp with Charlotte at the time. And at the time, Charlotte had Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson.
Sure.
Didn't feel I was going to have that many problems with Alonzo, but the guy who was killing me in camp was LaRon Ellis from Syracuse.
Sure.
And I found myself to always play well against LaRon, but he was doing things that I just couldn't stop. Couldn't figure him out because I figured I had him pegged. And I found out that he had a trainer up here, a trainer by the name of Wayne Alpert. And Wayne had, he had spent a lot of time training guys like Antonio Davis, Theo Ratliff, guys like that. And I see him on the elevator with LaRon, and I'm like, oh, I got to get some of that. And Wayne, who happens to be the best coach I've ever had, the absolute best coach I've ever had, as far as challenging me and giving me keys to not only understand more about the game, but understand more about myself. He was based here in Boston. So I came up to Boston and I fell in love with it. Look, I was only here in the summer, so I didn't see any snow. Yeah. And New England, so it was great.
Yeah.
And from there, I went on and, we built a great business together. And, we had college kids come in. Sean was sending me his kids, kids from St. Bonaventure. I mean, I basically had the A-10 on lock. These guys went on and they played professionally, and we still keep in contact with each other. But since then, I've found another calling. And what I'm seeing with kids right now is that their voices are being muted. And I was raised by my grandmother. And my grandmother, she taught me three things. She said, never be afraid to cry. Don't believe that bullshit that men aren't supposed to cry. And when I did, she was the first person to hug me. Okay. The second thing was that if you don't develop your own voice, other people will speak for you and you will not like it. Okay. Mm. And the third thing was, she said, if you ever get too big for your britches, I will shoot you. In her nightstand, she had a loaded 22 pistol. Now she said, it's not going to kill you, but it's going to hurt you. I just see our kids not developing their own voices. And, what I found out in Spain was the biggest variance that I've seen in what, all this diversity stuff is diversity of opinion. Okay. That's probably the greatest variance that I've seen. And it should be allowed. Right now, the cancel culture for speaking your mind, now, it doesn't help them. So what I've tried to do is help the kids learn who they are, learn how to express themselves, learn how to not just communicate with other people, communicate their thoughts, but how to connect. And, you know, basketball does that, you know, when you're in a team atmosphere. And the court is basically a classroom. You know, we get to talk life. Right now, it's turned more into a life coaching business than anything. I'll be opening up, I'm setting up the website now, but it's what I love to do. It's not about ball. It's not about ball. I mean, you know, the funny thing is that when COVID came and they shut down everything, athletes were irrelevant. They were irrelevant. It didn't matter if they played. So I try to get them to think about that. You know, who are you going to be? And people may remember what I did on a basketball court, but they deal with me because of who I've become. Right? I'd be silly to say that I didn't have advantages playing ball. It was great. But now that it's over, they talk about giving back. Honestly, I'm not giving back to them. I'm just learning how to express myself again. Because if I don't do it, then they won't have the balls to do it. They've got to see, you know, it was James Baldwin who said that, you know, the youth have never been great at listening to their elders, but they've never failed to imitate them. So if they're looking at me and whatever I've done in basketball, that's great. But I get to talk to them about life. So, you know, now I'm putting things together. Eventually, I want to get a TED Talk and just share the message.
Jerry, you want to finish up? I mean, that's great stuff.
Well, listen, that's fascinating. Very well said. I mean, you know, and, you know, I think, unfortunately, you know, we need more guys, you know, like you doing with what you're doing. Because, you know, what the future holds, you know, in the game of basketball, you know, we don't know. I mean, you have the right approach. I think your story is remarkable, you know, coming from Atlantic City, being, you know, a Jersey guy. I really, you know, appreciate and respect, you know, what you have done. And, you know, you're well traveled and you're using the game or what the game taught you and using your experiences and really carrying that in a positive way forward. And anybody that's working with you, you know, I'm sure is going to, you know, going to benefit greatly for that.
No, I love what I do. You know, I let my wife, she'll read some of the letters that we get from the parents. You know, they'll send emails and I'll let her read them and, you know, she'll start crying. So, I mean, again, this is just me expressing myself. I've been fortunate to be able to do a lot of things in basketball. I mean, I'm fortunate to have you guys interview me and give me a chance to share my story. And I'm really appreciative about it. And, you know, I would just want to say thank you. And, you know, I hope this your show continues to grow and you do wonderful things.
Thanks, Bobby. And
we appreciate it, Bobby. It's our trust me, it's an honor for us to have you on. And, you know, just to show how much respect we have for you, I took down some Hoya memorabilia off the wall. So, no, but all kidding aside, it's an honor for us to have you. I mean, it's like I said, remarkable story. And it's remarkable what you're still doing to this day. So, you know, we thank you.
Yeah. And thanks, Bobby. And thanks for being considerate. You know, I know we were trying to make the connection here, but thanks for being considerate and based on your story. So, I mean, you know, it was always an honor watching you play. I mean, what you said is definitely poetic. So we appreciate it. And then, you know, keep on doing what you're doing. Boston's a great city. So, I mean, it's a great place to live. So
it sure is.
So.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it. So,
thanks again, and we'll be following you still.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Have a good one.
Thanks, Bobby.
Take care.
I'd like to thank Bobby for his time, also his consideration. We had to cancel him on him a couple times, and he was able to make time for us. Look him up as far as Big East basketball, and also if you have a young athlete looking for any of his physical training. Making your voice being heard. I think that he's has an impressive journey. He's been through Europe, knows about basketball, also knows about his Pitt Panthers classmates. Jerry, I don't know if you want to add anything else to the end remark.
No, we thank Bobby for joining us. I mean, it was a really good interview, very insightful. You know, we kind of got to geek out a little. We reflected on the old Big East, the old Continental Basketball Association, you know, better known as the CBA. And it was just great, you know, to really have him talk with such passion, you know, on how he's trying to inspire and really move, you know, athletes forward in, you know, 2024, which, as we all know, has become, you know, very, very difficult to do with, you know, old school values, you know, obviously, which, you know, he has not forgotten, you know, his Atlantic City roots, which is always refreshing. And it was really a joy and a pleasure, you know, to talk to him. We could have, you know, talked for hours with him. He was that easy.
And he took Georgetown, you know.
He took the ribbing well, yes.
Yeah, he took the ribbing well. He didn't fire back. Yes. So look forward to other episodes with Jimmy and Jerry on Sports Consigliere's very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.